looking for something. A new way, a new understanding, a connection, some comfort. You've got questions, and Light on Living puts the spotlight on all the answers so you can shine. Lift and lighten the load of life's challenges and learn simple and easy ways to live a healthy, happy life. You'll gain insight and start to see things in a new way that motivates you. You're invited to hear new, see different, and feel more as Lisa shines the light on living.
Well, welcome everyone to Light on Living. I'm Light Coach Lisa, holistic nutritionist and life coach, helping to lighten the load of life's challenges. And now this isn't exactly a challenge, but it's certainly something that is so non-tangible, like in this physical world, that I was so excited to have this topic come on. This is all about, and we've all heard the word enlightenment, but even the word self-realization. I mean, these are things that you go, gosh, how the heck do I get there and even know that I'm there? And what does that feel like? And it's different to everyone. And so I was really, really quite lucky. I was at a networking event, and up came this wonderful gentleman and said, I've got a book for you to read. I'd really like you to read this book. And I looked at it and I thought, oh, this is a novel, like a science fiction and fantasy novel. And this is not typically something that I would, that I find myself reading. But I'm really, really glad that he had such a warm heart when he walked up to me and gave this book to me, because, you know, who doesn't love a good story? I mean, Walt Disney does this all the time. They put these beautiful, animated, imaginative stories to help us experience or just walk through something that could be so out of this world, but yet we find this connection in there somewhere. Like, our hearts are connected, our minds are opened, so that we can get a grasp on things, like an understanding. And so I want to tell you about this book, because now I haven't quite finished it, because this is how intense this book is. First of all, it's so beautiful and descriptive and like fun and all that kind of stuff. But this is not like a self-help, like step one, meditate, step two, do this. This is actually a fable. It's a story, and it has real life characters, and they're so interesting. And look, it really takes you away, and it's really neat, because I think he came at the perfect time, gave this book, this story, so that I would carve the time out, make the time to go into a different place that I wouldn't have normally gone, and into a different way. And I really appreciated that. So who I've got with me today is Claudia Morgan. I like to say that properly. And just a smidge about him. He was born in Romania and is called Canada his home since 1997. And funny of Claudia, I want to tell you that I actually moved to Nashville in 1997. So we swapped countries there. Well, anyways, Claudia received several awards for his stories that were published in SF Journal and Science and Technology magazine. Claudia was a member of the Friends of the Merrill Collection in Toronto, organizing the first science fiction art show in the association's history. The book is called The Decadence of Our Souls. Like, it's just so beautiful. Well, The Decadence of Our Souls is his first novel, and it highlights his belief in a potentially better world if the meanings of love, gratitude, and empathy could be understood by all of our brothers and sisters. And when I say that, this entire fable, like, I want to say the word self-realization again and enlightenment, but the biggest word that just is, like, this book has done through is love. And, that's one of our favorite topics that we talk about. And so as we explore not just the book and the story, but how this came to be and what his beliefs are, I just want to welcome Claudia Morgan to the show. Thank you so much for sharing this with us.
Thank you, Lisa. Thank you for having me. And it's great to be in front of such an amazing audience on OMA radio. And yes, this story has, in fact, started in my subconscious 30 years ago. I thought about what will happen if all souls will get enlightened, all souls will reach out a level where they can leave the earth, the physical form. And that story stayed with me for, as I said, for 30 years. Also, 30 years ago, I wrote a short story, which I titled it The Decadence of Our Souls. And then I forgot about it. And I think a year and a half ago, when I was almost done writing the novel, my parents found that notebook in their attic, and they wanted to throw it away, and they asked me, do you know what it's all about? And I said, tell me what's written on it. And they said, the title in Romanian, of course. And I said, you know what, this is the title of my book. So it came full circle after 30 years, and I really think people can, your listeners and my readers, can learn from it, because as you said, it's a fable about our day-to-day life, but in a different format, in a fantasy format, because sometimes people like to perceive things differently if the angle is different.
Yes, and it really is different. And if I may, I want to read this little quote from somebody else who has read your book, because it really encapsulated how perfect it was. They wrote, Claudia Morgan's fable about enlightenment is a compelling analysis of humanity's search for meaning. The dichotomous tale of animal wisdom and human decadence will have you asking that meaningful question and wondering what is possible. And you actually use animals throughout. Of course, you know I'm going to love that. I love animals so much. And I can share this because we're on the cover, but the animal that you chose is an elephant. And I want to ask right away, like, why the elephant? Why did you choose the elephant? Why did the elephant come to you to have him be there?
The elephant was another component of my inspiration. By chance, I received a photograph done by Gregory Colbert, which is a Canadian photographer specializing in wildlife. So I received this photograph in which a child was reading from a book in front of an elephant, and the elephant was kneeled in front of the child. So imagine that sheer force and physical shape being modeled and being molded in front of that child. So I start thinking, what's the relationship between these two entities? What could be so important for the elephant to hear in order for him to stay put, to be so peaceful? And of course, in my story, the connection between these two entities is done telepathically. So the elephants are the teachers, because they are empathic, they have great memory, and they love. The elephants know how to love. So you can watch any video on YouTube about elephants, and you'll understand right away how much they love their calls, how much they love their they love each other. So right away I said the elephants will be the teachers, and the children will be the ones which will represent humanity, and they have to uplift their souls to one who created all. So I imagine that divine entity, divine matrix, I didn't give it a name which people can start, yeah, you know, getting upset about. I just gave it a generic name so it can apply to anyone of any religion or any spiritual belief.
Right, I love that too. Yes, right. You can't be any judgment or any segregation or anything. And one more thing about the elephant, which I thought was neat, is you talk about, well, here's how your book is so fabulous. Each chapter, you begin with a sort of, I don't want to say the word, well, let's call it a lesson or a quote or some kind of a statement. It's not an affirmation. It's literally like a learning, something of a teaching. And as I went through, and I want to talk about quite a few of them, actually, one of them really talks about the calmness of the mind. And when I think of an elephant, I mean, they're so calm because they're so big. They have to move slowly. Maybe it's fast for them, but, you know, they seem so calm, you know. So I thought that was how important is it for us to calm our minds to be able to tap into love?
I think it's very important. It's part of who we are, and I think we forgot about this type of process to be applied in our day-to-day life. So in my blog, I mentioned about how can we become better human beings, and it starts from an idea from the book. So we need to have that time of the day when we do introspection, when we talk to ourselves and understand, have we become better today? Have we done something good today, which can be paid for by the person who received that gift. So again, it's all about love, it's all about compassion, and it's all about empathy, because we all come from the same source. And if we don't understand that, this cycle of war and misunderstandings and finger pointing will never cease.
Mm-hmm. You know, I love that you actually said, have we become better today? That is really, that's like right in my face, because in a beautiful way, because often we're asked the questions, what did I do that was good today? What have I received that I'm grateful for? But I love the wording there. If we really think about that, have we become better? That, and in order for an improvement to be made, we do need to stop and not be ignorant to what's going on and everything. But there's one thing you said, oh, I just love this, and I think it's, I'm going to quote, not super quote it, but the chapter 11, one of them really talks about if we don't make the time for whomever, we call it source or, you know, the one of all, God, all these things, if we don't make the time for them, they won't, or it, whatever, it won't make the time for us. And that actually, that's so painful. When I read it, I went, oh, no, I want to make the time. I don't want to be left alone. You know?
Yes, I mean, again, we have to focus on what we want to become. And we have to start with realizing and acknowledging what we are today. So if we start our day by thanking for another day on this earth, for thanking that we have a family, or we have, for whatever we have, the little we have, it's very important to be thankful for that, because no matter how little we have, there are people with less than what we have. So we, again, it's a journey from where we are today to where we can be tomorrow or in a week or in 2 years. If we focus on the fact that we have to be better, we have to be kinder, to ourselves and the people around us. And yes, the book is structured, each chapter starts with a teaching. I call it a teaching from a book I imagine called We Are One. And while in Romania, recently to launch the Romanian version of this book, I was asked several times, when are you going to write this mm-hmm. book, We Are One? And to me right now, it's a challenge, because on my way back, I wrote more of these teachings. But it has to be in such a way, in such a format, that it's not a spiritual book and it's not a religious book and still stays within the framework of a fantasy book. So mm-hmm. right now I have this challenge of maybe writing a small version or a kind of version of this We Are One book.
Yes, and then, you know what, that's actually a good challenge for you. It will really stretch you and allow you to tap into, because you had shared something with me just yesterday, because I was so lucky enough that you were having a book signing close enough to me that I could get to. So I got to meet you again in person there at Chapters Indigo, and as you got to talk with the people. I want to just on you I asked you, how did this come to be, this writing? And you told me something so cool, because I can't imagine writing the book the way that you wrote it. I would just be so distracted. So tell everybody how that came about, how you wrote this.
Oh, yes. So I started this book with having no intention of writing a book, in fact. I just started taking notes, looking at that photograph which I mentioned earlier about the elephant and the child. And I got so many ideas that at one point I said, you know what, I have to start writing about this, writing the story. And when I realized that it became a book of 115,000 words, I said, okay, now what I'm going to do with it. And again, because you asked about the writing process, I write in a very different way. I still have a day-to-day job, so I write when I commute. I write at lunchtime, or I write late at night when I find the time. So it's a challenging environment we are living in. So we as authors, and I'm pretty sure I'm not the only one in the same position, we have to find our space, we have to find the calmness in our minds where we can express ourselves on paper and bring these stories to our readers, because people will be able to find a golden nugget, not only in my book, but in other authors' books as well.
Yes, it was like the book. Well, and what really caught me, like, I just can't even imagine. You were on a train, like, you were commuting on a train with people all around you and jiggling and jostling and stop, you know, there's a stop every, I don't even know how many kilometers. And I just like, wow, the focus or the clarity of which you were receiving this book. And I love how a lot of authors will say, the book came to me, the book came through me, the book came this and that. Now, you're co-creating it. You have a big part, as you said, and a better big job in life. And the commitment, did you set a deadline or timeline, or did you just allow it to flow and let it come to be how it was supposed to be at the timing it was?
Usually I don't set up deadlines. I just let it flow because I don't know if tomorrow I'll have the same time as today. So if I can write 4 or 5 pages today, that's a bonus. And maybe tomorrow I'll only write 2 or 3. So in the end, it will even up the amount of writing at the end of the week. And it's funny that you mentioned that about flowing books. I have another blog on my website, which is called Are the Writers Channeling Their Books? And even if they don't acknowledge that or publicly acknowledge that, I still think that most of them have a special connection with the divine, and they get the right messages, they get the right inspiration, because in my case, I can start the day with one idea in mind, and by the time I finish writing, that idea might have shifted a different way. I can bring in another character or a different spin to the previous action. So that comes to me naturally. And again, I'm convinced that it's the same process for other authors, which bring great stories to us.
Yeah. Thank you for sharing that. Now, we're going to zip off to commercials, but only for a few moments. When we come back, we're going to talk more with Claudia Morgan about the decadence of our souls, not just the running process, but we're going to dive into a few of these teachings and lessons that he's written about to help everybody get closer to enlightenment in their own way. When we come back.
Best of the holistic, spiritual, and conscious world. Om Times Radio. IOM FM.
Humanity Healing International is a small nonprofit with a big dream. Since 2007, HHI has been working tirelessly to bring help to communities with little or no hope. Our projects are not broad mandates, nor are they overnight solutions, but they bring the reassurance that no one is alone and that someone cares. To learn more, please visit humanityhealing.org. Humanity Healing is where your heart is.
My name is Victor Furman. Some call me The Voice. I've always been fascinated with human nature, spirituality, science, and the crossroads at which they meet. Join me Wednesdays at 8 p.m. Eastern on Om Times Radio, and we'll explore these topics and so much more on Destination Unlimited.
Welcome back to The Cat Show. Up next, we have Nico. Nico is a member of the Shelter Pet Group.
That's right. A group known especially for their sunspot sleeping, ball chasing, leg rubbing, and of course, companionship. Just look how she struts.
It's like she owns the place.
And see how she curls up and cuddles her person.
The pitch on her purring is simply perfect.
Nice one.
Fantastic cat. But really the best way to know an amazing shelter pet like Nico is to meet one.
Visit theshelterpetproject.org today. Adopt.
Brought to you by Maddie's Fund, the Humane Society of the United States, and the Ad Council.
Well, thank you, everyone, for hanging out with us today. And just this is such a fun show for me because it's just a topic I never, ever explore, science fiction and fantasy, and how that can actually help us get to where we need to be, feeling more love, feeling more connected, feeling more just acknowledging and hearing the wisdom that's actually in us and that how we're all connected. Right away, I want to mention to everybody, please go to my Facebook page, which is Lisa Berry, B-E-R-R-Y, and you will see a beautiful picture of the cover of this book. I just love this picture, so you can see what we're talking about. You can see Claudia and myself from yesterday. There's some fun pictures there of his book signing. He also has written a second book, Water Entanglement. And I mean, come on. You just come up with the best titles ever, Claudia. I love them. Because I want everybody to kind of, like, this is so different for me. This is so exciting for me. I want to read the back of the book of just what the book is about, because I have a really, really cool question for you, Claudia. So allow me to share, everybody. When a pure soul is touched by decadence, the boy Rakesh and his mentor, Otan the elephant, lived a gentle life of enlightenment in a jungle enclaved of children and elephant teachers. Then the disappearances began. Rakesh is a gifted orange soul, and I did say that, orange soul, that is so cool, destined to bridge souls with the one who created all. But when he is kidnapped, Rakesh is exposed to the corrupt city of Blaita, and later the technology advanced Korobot, two cities obsessed with pleasures of the senses. Bent on fulfilling his calling as soul journey bridge, Rakesh naively tries to teach these city dwellers about enlightenment of the soul. But their idea of enlightenment isn't the same as his, and his gift intrigues their pleasure masters. In the end, who will teach whom? And oh my gosh, just even reading that, because I know where I am in the book. This is like, you go through so many emotions, and also too, as I was reading this, Claudia, I almost felt guilty for even some of the human things that I do. And I want to ask you this very question based on all of this and after writing it. One of the chapters talks about purification of, first of all, the mind, and then you talk about it in the book, purification of the city. I mean, they have filthy water and this and that, and they're rebuilding it. A couple things I want to ask you. If you were to think of a person who would benefit from purifying their mind so that they could reach, feel love and reach enlightenment, what does a person look like who needs purification, who would benefit from that?
I don't think it's a specific person. We all need that. To be honest with you, from an early age, if we teach our children how to meditate, how to not touch things which or think things that will mud their minds, that will be the path to go. We miss this in our lives right now as a society. So it's the purification of, as you said, the cities, but the purification of the body and purification of the mind. We don't live holistic anymore. And this is a term and a concept which was kind of reinstated or reintroduced to our language recently. And not everyone understands what the word holistic means. So we can, you know, try to do yoga, as a lot of people are doing these days. But if we don't meditate, or if they don't meditate, or if they don't have a proper diet, then that there is no balance in their life. They cannot have only one component of that holistic picture or holistic life. So there are small pleasures, what I mentioned in the book, pleasure of the senses, which, if they are enhanced, you lose that touch with divinity. You lose the touch with yourself, with your inner self, and your mind is somewhere else and not to what matters if you really want to reach that state of bliss, which I also mentioned in the book, and is similar to enlightenment. So we have to somehow give up, in between quotes, give up some of the small pleasures in order to get to something bigger than ourselves, and something which sages, years and thousands and thousands of years before us, mentioned in sacred books that can be achieved, can be attained. And again, I'm not going to name names, not to offend anyone, but it's there. And we, each of us, can go back to whatever sacred book we like, and we'll find that they all mention certain pleasures or things in life we have to give up in order to get the bigger picture.
I love that. You know, that's so neat that you talked so specifically about the word holistic. I actually have this saved on my, I just took a snapshot, like a screenshot. I looked up the word. I want to know the absolute definition of the word holistic. And it was Tuesday at 10:34 a.m. I have to tell you, this is how right on the same page we are. I want to say what holistic health is actually an approach to life. Rather than focusing on illness or specific parts of the body, the ancient approaches to health considers the whole person and how he or she interacts with his or her environment. It emphasizes the connection of mind, body, and spirit. And I am so glad that you just said that so I could share it, because you do talk about, you're right, the environment, our bodies. It's not just doing yoga. It's about the mind and that. I want to ask you, when you finished writing the novel, what did anything change for you? Because of writing it, did you have a different closeness to bliss, or just like for you, what changed for you?
I like to think that I was close to bliss during the writing process. I got so much inspiration, and most of the teachings which I started chapters with came to me during meditation. So I did get change in the process, because you cannot be the same at the end of the writing process, writing the book or writing the song or an artistic process. Your body, your mind will change. You will be changed for sure, because you have the experience, you've accumulated experience during this process, either it's a week or 2 years. So I did research on how the brain works, how the heart works, what's the correlation between these two important organs in our bodies. So I mentioned about this connectivity in the book, because in fact the heart is the mind, it is the brain, and then the brain listens to the heart. We first hear, again in between quotes, and listen with the heart, and then the brain acts based on the signals sent to it from the heart. So also words and vibrations and thoughts are very important in our day-to-day life. And again, also mention all these correlations in the book, because what we speak is what we are, and we create our environment based on what we think. And if you look at the latest research, like scientific research, not a different type of research, scientific research, they kind of came to the conclusion that what the old and sacred texts were saying about the power of the mind, and then we can create our environment if we are focused, and we can generate and send that signal in the ether and into the divine matrix to create our future, that's becoming real. They are being kind of acknowledged even by the scientific community, again, about those who are quite open-minded. So we have to be very careful what we think and what we say on a daily basis, because they are all vibrations. Thoughts are vibrations and energy. Words are vibrations and energy. So we create our environment and we influence the people around us based on our vocabulary and our thoughts.
I love that you're highlighting that. That is something that it does take practice. Awareness. It does take awareness first to go, gosh, what language am I using? What is my environment? Because I love the word environment right now, and because you've written about two very different environments in this book, you have a city of one environment and a whole beautiful jungle of this other environment. And it's fun now, after reading, you know, most of the book, I'm able to, I question myself, I go, oops, which environment am I in right now? Hold on here. What am I in, that city, or am I in the jungle? And it's so interesting how that vibration is so sensitive. Like it can be quickly changed for the good, of course, too. Like we can go, oh, I just snapped out of this. And I think a lot of people don't realize how quickly they can. Let's say I got upset with something. Something didn't go my way. You know, usually it's the neighbor's cat who gets me a little bit going, because he always comes over and messes with my cat, and I love him to pieces, but I don't want him, you know, in my world. So I get upset, and then I think, okay, wait, I don't want to be upset, because first of all, I'm just upset, and I have to walk myself through this, because anything can kind of tweak us, but the beauty is how quickly we can just add that mindfulness and love and, you know, gratitude for in any situation and change it. It's not like we just have to, you know, it's going to take forever. We can actually make changes rather quickly.
Yes, and again, you mentioned the key word there, awareness. We have to be aware of our acts. We have to be aware of what we say and how we behave in relationship to our environment. So we have to let go. And, you know, everyone gives that. The simplest example is when you drive, someone cuts into in front of you, and then you get mad and you horn and you do all kinds of things. You have to let it go. Otherwise, you will be a pack of nerves for the rest of your days, yeah, day and days, if you keep maintaining the same habit. And again, you are with your family. Your kids are not always behaving properly. And you have to know how to handle them without creating more tension in the family. And again, I'm not a specialist in the field. I'm just talking based on my own experience with my own kids. And I had to adjust myself to their behavior. I had to go and say, you know what, I apologize to you. I didn't behave properly in this situation. You were right. So that makes him feel that he's being listened to, he's being treated as an adult, and also makes me understand that I made a mistake, and in a way I'm trying to get better by acknowledging what I've done wrong.
That's actually a tough one, and I'm so glad you say that, because it actually, you know what, as we can share with another human being and voice it, that we have, we acted in a way that we'd like to change. We'd like to say, I'm sorry that this is we did make a mistake. But you know what? There's actually a kind of, like what you said about letting go, there's a freeing, like you have freedom once you say that, because now you're not trying to hide from something like, no, I didn't do it, or I don't want anybody to know, or I just feel guilt and shame. So you release so much. It's not just that moment of that incident. You're actually releasing all that the lower vibration, the lower energy. I want to ask you, Claudia, we talk about meditation a lot. How do you meditate? Like, do you every day, do you have a system? Like, how do you go into meditation?
Yes, I'm a devotee of Self-Realization Fellowship. It's an organization based in Los Angeles, California. And we do practice, and particularly myself, I mean, this is my schedule. I do meditate in the morning and in the evening for about an hour each time. I still am far away from the level that I like to be. I have to admit that. Again, like anyone else, I need focus. I need much more focus, interior focus than outside focus. And that's a work in progress. And as long as we try, and we try harder every day, we will achieve that goal.
Becoming better, like what you said. And what was the name of the organization again in the Los Angeles?
Self-Realization Fellowship.
Self-Realization Fellowship.
Yes. Was created by, was founded by Paramahansa Yogananda from India.
Oh, well, that's, yes, can anybody join? Or?
Of course. And he's the one who wrote Autobiography of a Yogi.
Oh, okay.
Very popular.
Gotcha. You know what? Yes, now that you're saying that. You know what? You have such a beautiful accent, and it said it so quickly. I was like, well, sure. You talk faster than I did. Now, I did want to just ask, so in The Decadence of Our Soul, who has anybody come to you after reading it and have said that it just helped them get somewhere they needed to be, like they had a change or this, you know, thing in their life that happened because of this? Because of your book?
Yes, I did have instances where people walk up to me and said, I think now I understand a little bit more that I have to give up this or that in order to transport that energy or allocate that energy to my spiritual path. So that's a very good thing. Also, they identify themselves with some of the characters. And I got a remark like, why did you kill that guy or that character, like Bart, the teacher? Because I didn't like him. Because I found myself in him. I wanted him to live longer. Oh. And I said, no, he had to die because the plot required him to be gone. And for Akash to be able to be manipulated in such a way that the story will end up the way I want it to end. So, in any other story, not in on my story, people are finding themselves in these characters, and they want the characters to evolve based on their mind and their mindset and their experience. Yeah. Sometimes that doesn't match because my experience and the way I thought about the story is different. But in the end, they all get something. And I heard this remark so many times from various authors saying that if one person is being changed after reading my book, I achieve my goal. So it's the same with me. And based on the feedback I received, based on the comments on Amazon, I think, and I'm convinced right now, and I know that the book is touching some souls over there, which are on their path of path to enlightenment, and overall on a spiritual path. Either they will reach enlightenment or not, they're on spiritual path, and hopefully they will pick it up from where they're going to leave it on their next incarnation.
Mm, oh my goodness, that's a beyond global. I mean, that's just a pure like conscious community goal, and I want to just highlight that. Thank you for sharing that. Now we're going to head off to commercials in about 20 seconds, but I want everybody, if you want to go look at this really quickly now, the title of the book is Decadence of Our Souls, and it's a novel by Claudia Morgan. It's C-L-A-U-D-I-U Morgan, M-U-R-G-A-N, and we'll be back in just 2 minutes.
The best of holistic, spiritual, and conscious world. Om Times Radio. IOM FM.
Ascending Hearts is no ordinary dating site, but a spiritual dating site with a purpose, to link you with your soulmate. We engineer the serendipity so you can trust that you will attune with someone that has the same matching vibration as you. Ascending Hearts, the conscious dating site for the spiritually aware. Try Ascending Hearts for free, ascendinghearts.com.
Grab a cup of tea or a glass of wine and tune in for Inspired Conversations with publisher Linda Joy on Tuesdays at 2 p.m. Eastern. Linda creates sacred space for leading female luminaries, empowering authors, heart-centered female entrepreneurs, coaches, and healers. A soulful venue where guests openly share the fears and obstacles they've overcome, wisdom and lessons learned, and the personal journey that led them to the transformational work they do in the world. Inspired Conversations, to empower you on your path to authentic, soulful living.
So I'm a cat, and I just moved in with this new human, and she's got this little toy she's always playing with all day long. Tap, 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 bloop, bloop. She can't put it down. There it is. Oh, and get this. She even talks to it. Last week, she asked it for Chinese. And guess what? Egg roll showed up. Like magic. Humans have cool toys.
A person is the best thing to happen to a shelter pet. Be that person. Adopt. Brought to you by the Ad Council and the ShelterPetProject.org.
So, Claudia, while we were there on commercial, just before, you had said something, and honestly, it kind of just I just got a realization. So I have to tell you now, I'm not even finished the book, and you've actually just changed something for me, and I want to share it with you. By you saying that, you know, some people have come to you after reading the book and said, why did you kill that character off? I didn't want him to die. I identified with him. And then just now by you saying, well, and then clarifying that, you know, certain people had to go because if they continued their role in protecting the protection role, then that other person couldn't have been, you know, in the situation they were to do what happened. And I was thinking about that. And I've had my life flash in front of me as if it was a novel. And, you know, looking back, thought, oh, my goodness, what happens if I, you know, my mom has passed? And I, what if I came to, you know, the author like you and said, well, why did you kill my mom off? I really need, you know, I needed her. I wanted her there or something. But then using that same word that you just said, I just realized that, my career as a nutritionist was really for my mom. It started out for my mom, but you know what? It needed to be perhaps for more than just my mom. So my mom had to die early so I could continue and still find my why, like my thing. So you just have kind of made me want to explore and accept and embrace the things that maybe we've often questioned, like, why the heck did that happen? That wasn't cool, you know? But there's a bigger reason, becoming better about it reason.
Yes, I mean, we all get influenced, or we all, each of us take something from a book based on, again, as I mentioned, based on our experience and how it fits our environment, our day-to-day situation. A single person will look at that story from a different angle compared to one who is married and from someone else who is married with children. So they will look from a child's perspective, okay, that child has suffered. I should be aware that my children shouldn't go through that process. I should do everything in my power that I should protect my children from that particular issues. So, again, from a politician, if you look at the politics which are being played in the book between Krobot and Laeta, a politician might learn something else from the book, how I can negotiate a contract, how I negotiate with people which I'm dealing with and become a little bit shorter, or I can, you know, give up something from my end. I can become nicer and they will become nicer with me, and we can have a much better relationship than trying to be just a win-lose situation. Let's turn it into a win-win situation. So the book has a little bit of everything from politics to human behavior and a plot of a day-to-day life, and each of us can take a little bit from it. And going back to what we discussed about the overall, humanity and society of, you know, and how we run our society today, a terminology which is very, like is a disease nowadays, is instant gratification. And this is very powerfully highlighted in the book, instant gratification.
Yes.
Because this is what we are looking for today. We don't go deeper for, as I mentioned, introspection. We don't go for a much more mature reason when we do something. We just look for what I'm going to get in the next 5 minutes or within the next 24 hours. Mm-hmm. And I think that is something which is damaging the human spirit and doesn't give us enough purpose in life. If we just go for these small measures, material things are good at, you know, at one point, and they are good to make our life easier. But if we turn them into a goal of our lives, then it becomes, in my opinion at least, a disease. It takes away what we should enjoy, like nature or spending time with family, and not make material component of our life, purpose of life.
Oh my goodness, I love that so much. And actually, so many things you just bundled in there. And that was the word we were looking for yesterday, instant gratification.
Correct. Yes, you're right.
I'm so glad you said that. The one thing I love that you mentioned, that the material things, they in a weird way, they actually cannot even be a goal, because in order to have that physical thing in front of us, we manifested it. But the thing is, we had to have thought about it. We had to have had a vibration first in order to have manifested it. So I love that that we can highlight that the goal is really about a way of being. The goal is a way of being and being better. I'm hoping that we can do this. I would love, so I have not even, I don't know what water entanglement is about. I just think the cover is gorgeous, of course. But I would love for you to, because I want to get excited about reading your next book. What is water entanglement all about?
So water entanglement started from the idea that we don't know how water is. We don't know how to behave vis-a-vis water. We just, for most of us, living in a normal world is just the water on like the tap water, and we take it for granted. But what we drink is dead water. That water has no properties. So I start from the idea that, and I'm going to read from the back cover of the book. When will we understand that water has memory? Water is alive, and the time for her to awaken is now. What will humanity do if the scarcity of water becomes a reality and not just a subject for movies? Why can't we comprehend that we are made of structured water, and that by disrespecting the water, we disrespect ourselves? Since the creation of Earth, water and crystals have weaved their past into a billion-year-long tapestry that has captured the cycles of nature's evolution. It has observed the appearance of humans and their troubled but fascinating development, and the energies and vibrations of everything that is part of this amazing ecosystem. So in my book, the action takes place in 2055, and it starts in Toronto. And it's a worldwide movement where corporations are still greedy, and they don't care about other people. They just want to grab all the freshwater reserves and bottle it and sell it to the higher bidder. And then water is becoming alive. Water is kind of pushing back on our irresponsible behavior. So the Ganga River, Ganga, as the Indians are calling it, is not a sacred river anymore. Mm. And it's affecting all the humans which are bathing into it. The same with the Jordan River. So a lot of things are happening in the world related to water, and water is avoiding us, and the droughts are there to stay. And there is, again, a story in which I bring the healers from Hawaii. I bring the wise people of Native Indians, the caretakers of this world. And I'm trying to tell the story where we can still save ourselves, because the water was here before us and will be here after us. Mm-hmm. But we have to find this evolutionary gap, this common language to talk to the water and understand it and live in perfect symbiosis.
That is absolutely beautiful. And I can, you know, just all, the way you write and the words you choose, they're so descriptive and inviting, and they're like calling you in to read this. But I love that it's such a big picture that you create for us. It's this isn't just, like you said, tap water. And it's so funny, because I just last week we did a show, and the book was called Quench, and it was all about water. And specifically, we talked about structured water, and that is such a helpful word, just even hearing that in and of itself, a structure, whether we just structure that, like what you said earlier, meditation into our lives, or structure and fit in when you want to write, you know, the book. There's all these things, but water, which we're made of, and like you said, it was here before and will be after, has such a thing, and it is a resource, and there are people, I'm hopefully you're not predicting the future, that in 2055 that we'll still be in that kind of a world. I'm hoping that that's just the fantasy part there. But now, that book is out, correct?
Yes, I mean, it's a wake-up call, and I like to think of my books as manifestos for us, for everyone to read and wake up and take action. It's not easy to make people aware of what's going on in the world, because they all have their own issues, and their the media not always portrays these type of things in the light, in the right light, or bring it up at the right level. So there are a lot of issues all over the world which are kept local, and that's why we don't know about it, or we hear from third parties incidentally. I write the book just because, again, maybe from this angle, people will understand there is a crisis. People will read between the lines and identify the companies which I mentioned in my book. In fact, they're not fictional companies. I don't want anyone to sue me here, but they might read between the lines that when I'm talking about real companies in today's world. But again, from a legal protection, I had to use different names. But what's happening in this book is happening today in real world. And I just kind of extrapolated. And if you read about Mexico City there, it's a fact that Mexico City sits on top of an aquifer which is being depleted at a very high rate. And in my book, then Mexico City will collapse on the space which is on the cave, which was created by the lack of water. So that's a tragedy. And then you have tragedies happening in India and Jordan along the sacred rivers, just because water is acting differently. And going back for a second to what you said, structured water. So structure in this particular connotation is about the properties of water. Water has to have structure. Chemicals, it can change chemically, but the structure of water is very important. And Masaru Emoto was one of the first scientists who brought to light the fact that water has properties and absorbs our feelings, our sadness, our happiness. And the environment, whatever the properties of that environment. So our bodies, we have in our bodies structured water, and our cells can live forever if the liquid in which they are is structured and doesn't lose these properties. So it's something to think about when we drink a glass of water, especially if it's tap water, and I said it's dead water, pray over it. Say couple of words of thanks to that glass of water, and wait for a second, and that water will change its properties and it will do good to your body. Otherwise, you just drink that water.
Yeah, it's magical. That's truly magical. That to me is, we then become like, not magicians, but I don't mean that, but just such creators. We can choose the structure of our environment by doing these things. And that, thank you for highlighting that, because that is something that we can literally, before getting into a bath, before drinking, we can truly offer that, and change that environment, which you said, our language, our thoughts, and really work in tandem with things around us, like all the nature and, like you said, water. Now, I want to make sure that everybody can, so whatever book they want to buy from you, because I think this is honestly, how many languages? This is in two languages, your books, correct?
Right now, yes, The Decadence of Our Souls have been translated into Romanian language. I launched this book last week, in fact, on June 14th in Bucharest, Romania. I had a lot of people supporting me over there. It was great. I was interviewed by the on the national radio station on a specific program about diaspora. Right now I'm looking for other deals in Europe, maybe northern countries and Spanish-speaking countries and French-speaking countries. And my publisher, Author Academy Elite, is looking at this type of deals right now.
Wonderful. Oh, see, and that's why this really is a global. It really is for everybody. And we can see that because it's in the whole world. You just spent 2 weeks over in Europe and doing the tour and letting people know about this. And we're all connecting. We're all finding the same lessons and teachings and the same comfort and the same guidance from these and fun and imagination and all that. I want to thank you personally for bringing science fiction and fantasy into my world. It's not something I've ever done, and you just like abroad in this whole way that I could do this. So where would people go to find you to purchase the book and like give people instructions, directions here?
Yes, so they can visit my website at claudiumurgan.com, claudiumurgan.com. Also, if you do a search on Amazon by my last name, you'll find both books. Global release of Water Entanglement will take place on August 18th with a big party here in Toronto. Ooh. And I'll have speakers dialing in. I mean, scientists which are dealing with water, dialing in and talk about their research, talking about water, also talking about my book, because some of them did endorse the book, and I have their endorsements inside the book. Also, we want to encourage students, either high school students or even younger than that, to start thinking about water, doing experiments about water. And with a friend of mine, which is a scientist from Romania, and another one here in Canada, we'll challenge these students with various tests and lab experiments.
And just as, because we're going to run out of time here, I would invite everybody to check out either my Facebook page, Lisa Berry, and we can find out more from Claudia there. And just what a fabulous hour. We went by so fast, and we just ran out.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. Thank you so much.
Bye.
Bye-bye, everyone.